Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 35 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, chairman of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. Before we are joined by this week's special guest, I would like to briefly mention our sponsor, Amazon.com. If you want to help support this podcast, go to NatsGM.com, click on the Amazon link on the right side of our page, and go ahead and do your online shopping. One more favor, if I might, please rate and review this podcast on iTunes, as this helps us gather additional listeners for the show.
This is Matt from MattsBats.com, and you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
And now, without further ado, I am honored to welcome back to the program our official hitting ninja and baseball prospectus author, Ryan Parker. Ryan, welcome back to the Nats GM Show.
Howdy, glad to be back.
It's good to have you back.
It's good to be back. I think we might end up talking about that one left-handed hitter on the Nationals. His name escapes me, but...
Yeah, Denard Span?
We might talk about that guy a little bit. Yeah, little Denard. He's put together some good at-bats in the leadoff spot.
Yeah, I'm sure the audience is just dying to hear us talk about how he's been flipping the ball to left field. It'll be great. So, well, welcome back. How are you, Ryan? It's good to have you back. And I guess you're in Charleston right now?
I am. Just getting the summer season started out here. Girlfriend's graduating, getting her real people degree, getting her master's degree. I'm just finishing that up, and then who knows where we'll be next.
Well, congratulations to her, and it's good to have you back, like I said. So let's dive in and talk a little hitting this week, because I'm having you on, obviously, because you did a great job the first time and because we're buddies. But I wanted to build a little bit off the interview that we did on site maybe it was last week or 2 weeks ago now. And the response was terrific. So I think so many people have questions about hitting and kind of what's going on with the offense in baseball. So obviously, you were the natural person to come to talk to and have you back on.
Yeah, let's get after it, man. I can talk hitting 24/7.
All right, well, let's start. First place I want to start, before we start talking players and specific Nationals with left-handed swings, I want to kind of get a general question for you. I see this on Twitter a lot, that you talk about some of your hitting pet peeves. I'd love to just kind of hear and kind of give you the floor here to kind of start with just some of your, things that you don't like that you're seeing from hitters these days.
I could have a whole podcast about just all the absolute crap that I see around for hitting, but a lot of it comes down to so much destruction now is just taking the athleticism out of swings or taking away, kind of these big moves and what can go right in guys' swings. So a lot of what I see with kids is, they've been geared to minimize what can go wrong in their swing, so we have a generation of hitters who are great at hitting 130-foot line drives, but not much else. So a lot of stuff you see when it's just kind of pieces of advice that limit movement or limit athleticism. You'll see things like get the foot down early, which never made sense to me just because, the saying is hitting is timing, so why are we giving kids a cue that deliberately disrupts their timing and trying to be early?
Right.
That one always just drove me crazy. The other one, keep the head still, which in theory sounds great, but it doesn't work in an actual swing. I think Barry Bonds is the only guy who was ever able to keep his head perfectly still and hit. Everybody else, their head will move kind of forward and down as they swing. Gradual movement on your head is not going to, completely disrupt your vision to see the baseball. That one drives me nuts. Probably the biggest one, this is so obvious, is you get all these people who talk about creating backspin, whole swing down on the ball thing. I've seen coaches who say that, and I just want to, I want to just walk up to them and be like, all right, if you're hitting fungo to your team, is that how you're going to hit fly balls in the outfield? Is just try and swing straight down and hit a backspin shot to them?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, the day I see a coach who's able to consistently do that in fungo is the day I'll buy into the whole, try and create backspin by, chopping down at it idea.
Well, let me start with each of these because they're all interesting to me, and I'm glad you started with the athleticism one because that is the thing I see is, you know, all athletes in other sports, you kind of promote athleticism. You want them to be faster. You want them to swing harder, or, you know, like in golf or other sports. And it seems like in baseball now we're teaching a generation of kids to, you know, flip the ball to right field, like you say, and not trying to really just hit for power. I mean, Bryce Harper, and we'll talk about him later, feels like the exception in this generation.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, one, it's easy to teach kids to be controlled, to have controlled swings. It doesn't take a real depth of knowledge in the swing. I think that's a little bit of coaching laziness, and I know I'm going to get some people mad when I say that, but it's how it is. You know, hitting the ball to right field is not God's gift to earth for right-hand hitters. You know, we have hitters who just don't know how to turn on balls, so... I mean, as a coach, I can take advantage of that with my travel team. We'll have guys that don't throw that hard ball. Just be like, look, run your fastball inside on these guys' hands all day. They're not going to do anything with it because they don't know how to turn on anything. So that just, it kills me, but as an opposing coach, you can kind of take advantage of it.
Sure.
I just think, you know, they don't understand that swinging and miss, you can swing and miss twice in an at-bat, and if on the, you know, 0-2 and then you take another hit, put one in the gap, who's going to remember the two times you swung and missed?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's when the swing and miss occurs. It's not that the swing and miss occurs.
Right. It just bugs me so much trying to free these kids up and let them move. And not only will they hit better when you do that, they're going to have more fun, you know, taking some big swings and actually driving the ball. Then, oh man, did you see me beat out that ground ball that I hit? No one's going to go brag about that. They're going to brag about the double they hit or the ball they hit over the fence.
And that makes all the sense in the world. I mean, aren't we supposed to be teaching these kids that you want to hit the ball hard? I mean, all we preach is line drive percentage and contact rate, and now we're teaching them to try to just pound the ball into the ground and run it out? I mean, I don't know. Go ahead. Yeah.
It's bad, and then you... I get into arguments with high school coaches with this. Like, yeah, but there are no bad hops in the air. But one, that's absolutely a shitty mindset because you're teaching kids, okay, don't succeed on your own merit. Make sure try and get the other guys to screw up.
Well,
and that's just a horrible mindset to instill in hitters.
Well, and that might work at the 8th grade or 9th grade level, but the next thing you know, you're playing varsity baseball, and these guys can pick it 95% of the time. I mean, that your theory kind of goes out the window.
Right, and I'm sorry, has an outfielder never misread a ground ball or never misread, you know, a line drive or a fly ball or just taken a bad route? It's ridiculous.
So what is your, and I want to get back to your biggest pet peeve now, so what do you try to counterbalance with these people that say you got to pound the ball on the ground to get backspin? How, I don't want to say this too dumbly, but how do you generate backspin?
That is just if you hit slightly below the middle of the baseball. You take a good swing, you're on plane with it, hit it slightly below the center, it'll happen. Of course, you can't really aim for that. It's just a natural result if you take a good swing and catch the ball just right.
Well, and that leads me to thinking about the idea of golf. It's your best shots are when you hit it just square, and then kind of the same idea that you're saying with baseball. Yeah, that makes sense to me. So then why are we teaching kids to try to... Is it just, once again, laziness or a lack of understanding that we're teaching kids to, you know, basically pound down on the back of a baseball like you would a, you know, a wedge?
Because technically you can, and you can do it off a tee, you know, or off front toss. You can get lucky and take that, you know, kind of downward hack, and if you catch it just right, yeah, you can spin it pretty hard to the back of the cage.
Right.
But, you know, if you go back to Ted Williams' old book, when he just diagrams, look, chop down, you have one point of contact. Right? If you kind of mash the plane of the ball, you're going to be able to kind of ride the bat through the zone, give yourself multiple chances to hit the ball. So, I mean, just when in doubt, I'm almost saying people have tried to outthink the swing. You know, probably the best book on hitting was written by Ted Williams, you know, decades ago.
It's amazing. I've read that book 3 times this winter, and I still learn something every time I read it. It's exceptional.
Yeah, and it's free online. There's literally no excuse not to read that book.
Well, and that actually provides a pretty good segue into the next topic I wanted to bring up to you is you spend a lot of time scouting hitters as well. I mean, you know, your work with Baseball Prospectus and everything that you do. I'm kind of curious, when you're you know, if you're walking to the field, and whether you know the prospect or you don't know who you're scouting necessarily, kind of what are the first things you're looking for?
First things I'm going to look for are things that I can't really that I can't teach in hitters or that aren't inherent. So if I walk into a park, you know, grab the roster, the first things that I'm looking at are guys' age, who's super young, and then size, who's super big. You know, you can't teach somebody to be Giancarlo Stanton size. You know, just like you can't teach a 24-year-old an A-ball to magically be 17 years old.
Both great points.
I look at those two things first. Once the actual BP gets going, I'm just gonna be looking for who has bat speed. Again, yeah, you can teach that to an extent, but when you're watching the professional guys, even at low levels, kind of the bat speed pretty much is what it is. They might add a little bit, but, you know, you walk out, you saw a young Javi Baez in the field, that bat speed is going to turn some heads. Beyond that, one of the things I'm big on, just the first couple rounds, watching kind of where they hit the ball and how they deal. Obviously, hope they're not pulling everything, but if they are working, you know, middle of the field to off the field, and if they're able to hit the ball and the ball stays true, it's not really hooking or slicing off the side, but it seems they've got kind of the barrel squared up to the ball, the ball's not just dying, it's actually got some carry to it.
That's interesting. Okay.
Mechanically, one of the bigger, kind of, I guess two or three big things I look for is, one, I like to try and get kind of high and behind home plate just so you can kind of see through the cage and see if they get to a good position when they're about to launch their swing. I don't care what their stance is particularly, but I know during the Hickory series, I kind of went out and posted pictures of two of their guys and compared it with Votto and Pujols, which, you know, hooray for unfair comparison, but you just look right when the front foot lands or right when it's about to land, most big league guys, the bat's about, you know, even with their shoulder or slightly behind it, height wise, same thing, it's about same height as their shoulder. And the knob of their bat is pointing somewhere between kind of straight down to the ground or maybe angled back a little bit, pointing towards, you know, the catcher's foot or shin. A lot of what you'll see with amateur guys is the bat already starting to kind of get parallel to the ground right there, and that's just a weak position to try and launch your swing from. Either you have to really sell out through your hips and you're trying to hook everything, or you have to push your hands to get to the ball, and at that point everything's kind of sliced.
Interesting. Okay, so yeah. The only way that so that tells the trajectory of the ball and the squareness of it tells you whether they're opening or they're closed. So that can tell.
Okay. Right.
I'm sorry, I'm just kind of following all this and processing it.
Well, I mean, well, you—I mean, you go to games.
Oh,
I mean,
what, all the time.
You know, yeah. So BP, you know, Sullivan shows up to the field. What are you going to be trying to kind of pick out in guys?
Well, first thing I look for is bat speed, and that to me is just something that jumps out. I mean, to me, and how they generate the bat speed—is it the wrists?
Because
if you don't have loose wrists, to me, then it's not going to happen for the most part. So, some of it goes hand in hand. I'm big on watching BP if guys are swinging and missing. If I see any swing and miss, that's like a death knell to me. Because you cannot be swinging and missing, you know, BP fastballs. And if you are, I mean, at high school level, it's one thing. But, you know, once you're starting to look at, you know, minor leaguers and, you know, that type, if you're swinging and missing at all or popping it up into the cage, there's a big problem.
Have you seen swings and misses, like at low A games and stuff?
Occasionally.
I see pop-ups into the cage all the time. I remember I was watching Eugene Emerald game. They had a guy, I can't remember this guy's name, big hulking third baseman, comes up, the first three swings he takes, he just swings and misses, breaks his bat in the next swing, and then hits one off the scoreboard. I was like, okay. This is going to be fun.
And that's another one you mentioned, too. Breaking the bat. If those guys ever break a bat in BP, you're just like, wow, that's really bad combined with the speed and what's going on. I like to see that, like you said, they're not just dead pulling it into, you know, trying to hit it into the third deck. You know, it's nice to see that they have some type of an approach, even if it's just, all right, first round I'm hitting it to right field, second time I'm trying to hit line drives, and then third time I'm selling out for power. But You know, it's maturity at that point, too. What are people trying to accomplish anything? Or are you, like I said, just trying to put on a spectacle for your manager to, you know, hit some souvenirs?
Yeah, well, and that's a difficult thing as well, because you see some guys, you see with some college players, when they get in kind of low A ball, all they do in BP is, you know, oh, I'm going to be so mature, hit, you know, ground balls the opposite field. It's like, yeah, that's fantastic, but you got to be able to, you know, at least let it eat one round.
Right. And there is something to be said for, and going back to kind of the point we made earlier about, you know, these guys can hit 135-foot line drives all day long, but can they hit it for power when there's an inside fastball? You know, some of that it's the same as well. That's great if you can hit it to right field, but are you hitting, you know, 12 hoppers to second? That's not really doing you any good.
Yeah, I mean, go watch. Again, I'm naturally going to work a Tapia reference in here.
Well, you have to. It's almost required.
Have to. Yeah, go watch Tapia's BP, and it's the weirdest thing, because the first kind of two or three rounds, it's whatever he wants to work on that day. But you might see him not hit a ball further than 150 feet. You know, this first three rounds, he's just trying to find the feel for the barrel. And then you hope the last round is when he's just kind of a moot, you know, future swagger pops around. And just starts kind of backfooting some balls. But that's the guy. BP is weird, but there's a process behind it.
Okay, so now let's get to the game action. Now you're watching the actual at-bats. You know, we've covered, you know, we can pretty much cover their swing plane and everything else pregame. What are you doing once, you know, at bat number one of prospect that you're scouting? What are you looking for?
Well, one, I'm going to look at is what are they doing in the on-deck circle.
Great point.
That's why you watch, I talk about it a lot when I hit out spring training, it's Hunter Dozier.
Great name.
Excellent. So if you watch him in the plate, yeah, he's kind of got an over-aggressive approach. So I'll talk about his approach to the game overall is better than anybody's I've ever seen at the minor league level. So when he's on deck, he won't take a practice swing, like when the game action's going on. I'll just kind of go through his takes, and then if there's a foul ball, you know, or a kind of stoppage in play, then he'll take some practice swing. But kind of while the pitch is going on, he's getting his timing, kind of trying to feel out his own rhythm, and he's kind of one step ahead when he gets into the box.
Yeah. Even another player that we were going to talk about too, Wilmer Defoe, a same type of guy, always on the on deck circle, you know, working on it. Like you said, won't take a whole swing, but he'll go through his, you know, his take progression or just trying to get a feel for, okay, this is his slider, this is his changeup. It's very good point.
Right. So once the game action starts, if I kind of have a good feel for the guy's mechanic, I'll go and try and either get directly behind home plate or maybe off to their open side a little bit, just because watching the side is great for kind of a mechanical view, but you can't really get a feel for, you know, how they're tracking the ball, kind of where the ball and the barrel kind of entering the zone. That's why I kind of like to kind of float, you know, be like right behind or a little bit off to the open side. So, you know, I'll watch how's their rhythm look. Is there any obvious kind of falls in the swing, or is there any kind of obvious, you know, holy shit, trying to jump the bat into the zone? The other thing I'll be looking for is obviously the guys, especially because, you know, we both watched a lot of low-level minor league stuff. When they swing and miss, you know, because it's going to happen, what are they swinging and missing on? If you have guys who are swinging and missing at stuff over the white early in the count, that's not a, you know, great sign, especially if it's by a lot, because they're going to get those freebies, you know, they're going to get those less and less as they move up the chain.
Yeah, I also like to see at that point, too, if guys can recognize spin, kind of the same idea.
Just how you can see that on takes is how early, if the pitch is close, are they looking pretty engaged and they kind of shut it down at the last second?
Or they flinch in the second, it looks like it's inside.
Yeah, and then it breaks back over. Once they kind of do unleash the slam, the swinging forward did actually have some feel for balance. You know, if a guy's falling over himself when he's taking swings in games, well, he's changing his own eye level. He really has, you know, how are you going to know what the barrel is when you can barely keep your feet under you?
Very true. Absolutely.
But, yeah, you're just looking for, are they taking advantage of mistakes? And, you know, are they able to hit kind of multiple pitches. Because if you watch a guy in a three-game series and he gets five hits, you think that's awesome. Then you go back and look at the books, and it's like, oh, okay, he hit, you know, five, you know, 88 mile an hour fastballs down the middle, back up the middle for hits. Like, that's great, but...
Yeah, that's another great point, too. I like to sit behind the plate during the games when they're hitting because I want to see what they're hitting. You know, I want to see, is it an 85-mile-an-hour, you know, fastball from some guy that's never going to reach double A, or is this guy hitting a 92 with some movement and he's just, wow, he's just, you know, was better than a good pitch.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of that is just making sure the swing is decent and making sure the thing doesn't move and have some flow through the swing. Seeing guys who are just, you know, stiff, and there's an obvious difference between when they swing and when they take. You know, you shouldn't really be able to tell which they're going to do the first maybe 60 to 70% of the swing. Because you should be ready to have it in swing mode the whole time. And if you take, okay, just shut it down then.
Yeah, you said something in a recent column that caught my attention. Is you said your take swing is basically the same as your regular swing, except you just, you know, you go about 60 or 70%. And that struck me because you're exactly right. There should be no difference.
Yeah, I think it was somebody else on hitting Twitter who said, you know, a take is just a swing that you pause. I was like, okay, I like that.
Yeah, I think that works. Well, I was trying to give you credit for somebody else's work, but, you know, that's the way it goes.
That's the only reason I'm halfway decent is I steal from everybody.
Well, then I'm stealing from you from stealing from everybody, so that's where we're at. So let's transition off of... talking theory, and let's talk about a couple of players.
All right.
I want to start with Bryce Harper. Kind of when I first pitched you the script, it was I wanted to kind of get your take on, you know, his increased walk rate this year and kind of the evolution of that. But this afternoon, he decided to go hit three home runs, including two into the upper deck. And so now it's maybe I want to start with you, like, early in his career. When he first came up, what did you see from Bryce?
Everything in his swing was turned up to an 11. Just the stride, the back foot coming off the ground, just the torque he was creating in his swing, pretty much unmatched by anybody in the show. And this is when Bryce was coming in at 19. So that's great, but you have to, you know, big league pitchers were able to kind of disrupt his timing early on. And you saw Bryce tinkers in his swing, I think, more than people realize. If you go back and look at some of his hits as a rookie, the stance looks way different than it does now. So here you have a guy who tinkers, and he has just incredible physical gift. So it's always just kind of been a matter of time when, you know, he's finally able to kind of match his latest set of mechanics to his physical tools, and hopefully today was kind of the start of that.
So now, you said everything was turned up to an 11. I'm assuming now what you're saying is maybe it's more ratcheted down a little bit, just the way his swing is. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But is that because of the injuries that he's had to his knees the last couple of years? Is that maturation, some of both? I mean, kind of what are you seeing today?
It could be both. I think because he had the oblique injuries too, right?
Absolutely, yeah. He's had a couple of them. He definitely messed up his knee a couple of years ago. So it's been a lot of stuff.
So I can see that maybe it even isn't so much as he's turned the volume down. He's just learned to kind of ramp up the volume more gradually in his swing.
That's an interesting
take. It's not just instantly, you know, flip the switch from 0 to 11. Maybe just kind of build up to it. But he still has, you know, unholy amounts of bat speed.
But the thing that I was talking to you about on Twitter today a little bit, we were going back and forth, is it seems to me that his body is much quieter, particularly his lower half, than it was a couple years ago. Is that the same thing you're seeing?
Yeah, his lower half is definitely cut it down a little bit. A little bit of that, the most obvious one, is the back foot thing. Like, that back foot used to just explode off the ground. And it still does, but I think there were times early in his career, especially after so many injuries, when his back foot coming off the ground should be a result, kind of the bigger muscles kind of up the chain firing. You know, you can just, if you take a swing off a tee and just, you know, arbitrarily kind of kick your back foot up off the ground, that's not going to make you drive the ball 400 feet. And I think there were some times early in his career when he was like, okay, that's what has to come up because that's what makes me a good hitter. And he's calmed that down a bit. Now, when it does come up, it's because, you know, the muscles in his leg and his thigh and his hips are pulling that foot kind of forward and up. But he's got that. He's got a stride now. He's always kind of had a complex stride. He kind of lifts, tucks the foot, reaches out, turns the foot the other way.
Yeah, he almost kind of toe tap. Wants to toe tap, but he doesn't toe tap.
Yeah, well, if you go back and watch like his old high school home run derby, it's just I don't know how he repeated that swing because it was like start wide, tap back, DJ up to the foot, kind of turn it out, kick it up, then stride and swing.
It was exemplary. How he could do it and actually keep in balance sometimes was beyond me. I guess it's because he was 16 or 17 years old.
Yeah, or 14 or whatever he was, doing 500-foot homers.
So, and the other thing that you've said he's added recently is a hitch in his swing, and I wanted to ask you about that because normally when I hear somebody say that somebody's added a hitch, that's a bad thing. Kind of like that bad movie a few years ago. So, so this a good hitch, I guess, or what is the hitch that he's added?
Well, hitches are funny. If a guy's not hitting well, it's a hitch. If a guy's hitting great, it's a timing mechanism. You know.
Okay.
But if you watch him, because now, the last couple of years, he's in the thing where he starts with the bat completely, and he lays it kind of across the shoulders when he kind of gets in his stance. And what you would see him do before is he would kind of lay the bat there and pick it straight up and then kind of go through his swing. What I noticed today, and I compared it to some old video, now he'll kind of, you know, still start with that bat laid across his shoulders, but he'll then kind of pick it up and almost point the end of the bat, kind of the barrel of the bat towards the pitcher, and then let his hand kind of work back in rhythm as his foot goes out. So it just looks better.
So that helps his timing is what you're saying.
Yeah, because now his hands and feet are moving kind of equal amounts. If you're going to have a big kind of complex stride like he has, you know, it's a lot easier if your hands are moving in rhythm with them, which, again, I hope he sticks with this pattern because I really like where his hands are at right now.
And when you say what his hands are at, what do you mean by, I mean, when I think about it, I'm thinking about generating the bat speed, but when you say his hands are in a good spot, what does that mean to you?
Actually, that's kind of bad phrasing, but I mean, I'm more talking about kind of the rhythm with his hand. Before, you would see a time when he would kind of start his stride, and then kind of at some midpoint during his stride, he would kind of get his hand kind of into a loaded position. And now, because he's added that extra little movement, he can start his hands and feet at the same time, and it's easier to repeat a movement if your hands and feet are kind of synced up like that.
Okay, now I'm starting to follow you, and I can definitely see it in my mind's eye what you're saying now. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So, well, hopefully he continues this, because whatever it is, it was working today, that's for sure. And I do want, before we turn off of Bryce, have you seen anything about the high walk rate? I mean, the only thing that I've noticed particularly is just he's not getting many fastballs in, you know, full counts. But are you seeing it? Is that just maturation, or?
I can't take credit for this one because, you know, he told me to go watch Bryce. I watched him today. He hit 3 bombs. But if you hop over to Brooks Baseball, which is, that site is just incredible for stuff like this.
Dan's a friend of the show. Absolutely. Good man.
Yep. If you look at, he's pretty much being pitched the same as he was last year, but if you kind of click over to what he's swinging at stuff lower in the lower portion of the zone at about a 20% less rate than he was in years past. I think before, kind of stuff knees or below, he was at like a 60% swing rate, and now he's cut that down to like 40-odd percent. I have to go, you can just kind of click over to his page and see what I'm talking about. Yeah, he's just learned to kind of try and see the ball up more as opposed to giving pitchers that low in the zone and offering it stuff when they're hitting their spots down in those quadrants.
Does that also mean he's not chasing as many pitches, you know, breaking pitches in the dirt, too?
Yeah, he's, obviously, he's still going to chase some because big league pitching is unfair. But just his kind of discipline at kind of all offerings lower in the zone has just been kind of the biggest marked improvement that you've seen this year.
Okay. Next player I want to talk to you about, and I've been trying to get you to write a column about it for BP for a couple of weeks, is Wilmer Defoe. Probably the hottest name in the Nationals farm system right now, at least offensive-wise. I had a chance to sit on him a few weeks ago. I know that you've seen some video of him. Let's start with just your thoughts of Wilmer Defoe.
I actually got to see Wilmer last year, but he got a little bit overshadowed by Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
And my focus was a little bit elsewhere when I saw him play. But I did dig up some old video I have on him. I really like Defoe. I don't know if I'm as high on him as guys like Witt are.
Well, Witt throws around sevens like, you know, most people, you know, chase women, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the anti-Mork strategy.
That's so great.
No, I do like Defoe, though. I do think he's going to be, I do think he's a big leaguer. You know, the concern you hear with Wilmer a lot is he's kind of older competition, or he's older than the competition, he's just dominating younger arm. But the thing is, you can't, even if you're old, you still need kind of the requisite skill to be doing the offensive damage that he is.
And we're talking and about a guy that's a year older than the competition or so. We're not talking about a guy that's 25 in low A. I mean, I think this has gotten a little overblown as well.
Right. Maybe he's a little bit older, but he's got the physical tools are there. I mean, running-wise, he's probably he's an easy 7 runner, right?
I don't like to throw those around too much, but easy 65, absolutely. I mean, he's very fast. He's not Trey Turner, but he's maybe a quarter of a step behind that.
Gotcha. So he's obviously got, you know, the physical tools. What I like about him, if you watch his swing, obviously, guys who have foot speed, personality seem to all have pretty fast hands. What I like with Defoe is that as he goes through his swing, a lot of guys who do have kind of fast hands like that, they like to get the bat out in front of them and kind of just try and flip at balls.
Mm-hmm.
I think of kind of like Jose Reyes.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
When he gets the shoulder, you can see the hands kind of get out in front, and he's just got, you know, strong wrist and forearms, he can kind of serve the ball. What you see with Defoe is he actually kind of turned the bat behind him and kind of let his hands kind of be along for the ride. But then when he's delivering the barrel, then he can, you know, get those hands going. And I really do like the swing. I really like how he repeats it from both sides of the plate.
And it seems like the swing is very similar from both sides of the plate. We often see switch hitters who have very different swings from one side to the other. It seems like Defoe's swing is a pretty mirror image from the left and the right side.
Yeah, he starts a little bit wide, a little bit open with those low hands. It kind of gets on the toe and then cuts the swing loose.
So what are the negatives with Defoe's swing? What do you see that you would try to exploit?
Kind of the only thing that I don't like, and again, it's tough to rip on a guy who's hitting, 330 right now?
Yeah.
kind of the only thing I don't like is that you watch, kind of watch his bat as he goes through his load. What you'll see with big league guys is their bat doesn't really stop moving. If you think of a guy like Cabrera, right, his bat, you know, his barrel really never stops moving as he goes through his stride and his load. What you'll see with Defoe is every once in a while, his hands will kind of stop, and he kind of just loses that rhythm in his swing, so he kind of has to restart and kind of feast off bad pitching then.
Okay.
But that's something that can come with time, and it's not so obvious. Some guys you keep them playing, and it's very obvious. It's like, okay, step one, step two, step three, now hit.
So if you were working... go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, it's not that bad with Defoe. But, you know, everybody's all got something they can work on, unless they're Miguel Cabrera.
So if you got your hands on Defoe for an hour for a lesson, what would you work on him with?
Again, it would just be that idea of not letting the barrel stop, whether that's, you know, kind of getting a Miguel Cabrera style. If you look at his hands, he kind of almost makes a U-shape with his hands, kind of starts about shoulder high, lets him come down, lets him work back up. just something to make, you know, make sure he's fluid throughout his entire swing and he's not trying to start from a static position.
Okay. That's very interesting. I'm going to have to watch for that the next time I go down to Potomac, which will probably be in the next few days with Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez arriving.
Yeah, those guys are okay at the baseball.
Yeah, they can kind of throw it pretty hard, pretty well.
Yep. So,
and, you know, they still have some other guys there that can throw it, too. I mean, you know, that's a pretty, that's a good team, frankly. That's a really good team. Go ahead.
Oh, no. You're good.
All right. Well, next player I wanted to talk to you about is, and maybe the final player, is Andrew McCutchen. One of my favorite players to watch hit, but I know he's had a slow start to the season. I know he's picking it up a little bit the last couple of days and weeks, but what are you seeing anything from him? Is it, you know, just a slow start in April? I know the knee's been a little bit of a thing. Kind of, what are you seeing with McCutchen right now?
I don't think it's anything to worry about. Just a little bit of a slow start, he's almost a little bit kind of tentative with that lower half right now. That could be because of the injury. You can see now that stride, he just kind of reaches that foot out instead of really kind of getting into his hips earlier. But again, I think he'll figure that out. I'm not too worried. Just mechanically where he's at, he'll get that dialed back in. Probably the thing that I would be a little more concerned about if the trend keeps going. Again, just hopped on Brooks Baseball and I pulled up his kind of spray chart from this season, 2014 and 2013. Just looked at him through the first month. And what you see kind of in 13 and 14 is he's using the whole field, but there's a concentration kind of in left field and left center.
Mm.
If you look at it now, there's very few line drives or fly balls to the left side. And it looks, you know, there's kind of a big cluster in right field. Maybe it's tied in to the injury and him kind of being a little tentative with the lower body. But hopefully, you know, he's not getting in his head that he needs to be working right field more.
That's a good point. What would that if you're seeing that, is that your concern that he's just trying to hit the ball to right field?
That would, if the trend continues as his knee kind of heals up and gets stronger, that would be my big concern. Again, I have to see it for a little bit longer. You know, some guys are just, they have bad months, and it happens to be in April, everybody freaks out because that's your whole season, you know, at that point.
Yeah, well, I guess that does make sense. But before we wrap up with McCutchen, kind of what in his swing makes him special? I mean, I think we all can kind of agree he's probably one of the 5 or 10 best players in baseball. What is it that when you see him that gets you excited about his swing?
Just the timing he has between his hips and his shoulders. What you'll see with him, he almost has the kind of rubber band effect where his hips get a little bit ahead of his shoulders and then kind of pull the upper body around.
Mm.
And that's how he's able to, you know, because he's not that big of a dude.
Not at all.
That's how he's able to put, you know, 20 out a year, is if he's got that timing between his upper body and lower body, where the lower body gets a little bit out ahead and then just kind of slingshots the upper body around.
I mean, I'm always amazed at the amount of power he can generate from, like you say, he is not a big guy at all, and he's certainly not muscular. He's wiry, but he's not a big physical guy. I mean, it's really amazing to me how much power and how hard he hits the ball on a consistent basis. So,
yep.
All righty. Well, I don't know where else should we go, Ryan. Who else do we need to cover?
I don't know. You can talk about Joey Gallo's power outage, 2015.
Yeah, I was good. That's a great topic because I had been meaning to ask you that. What's going on with Gallo? I mean, this guy was...
He's played, what, maybe 15 games?
And that is fair, sure. Okay. I mean, we'll give him that. But
yeah.
But this was a guy that was hitting three a week all summer last year.
Yeah, and I've talked to some people who have gotten to see him play, and apparently he's hit like 4 off the top of the wall. He's actually got like a triple, and he'll get it back. I'm not concerned at all about the great Joey Gallo power outage. What it does give me a chance to do is a nightly reminder that Tapia has more home runs than Gallo so far.
That is true.
One of these days, Farrell will actually give me credit for saying Tapia is a 7 hitter.
Oh, he'll never do that. That's not possible. Farron was going off on Scherzes today. You know, I don't know what's going on. He He must be grumpy. He's not on vacation anymore or something. I don't know what's going on with Uncle Mike.
Right. He can't just, you know, complain about the world of parks anymore.
Yeah, I know. So. Well, it's tough, you know. You can't complain with parks, yeah. You know. It's tough. So, who are you sitting on this week? Are you going to any games the next few weeks?
The next week is just going to be, you know, girlfriend's graduation. Greenville will be in town, so I can get out to a game and try and check out Michael Chavis on that roster. Be interesting to see that, because that was supposed to be the guy from last year's draft who was the rare high school hitter who guys were pretty high in his hit tool.
I really liked him. He was great, and I think it was the Aflac game a couple years ago. I love that swing.
I'm a little bit divided on it. I think the end result looks good, but I've heard kind of conflicting things about it, so we'll see.
I'll be curious to see what you think when you actually see him up close.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to ride up to Bowie tomorrow and try to check out Yastrzemski and see what he's doing a little bit.
I saw him. He was a Vanderbilt guy, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Yep.
I like him a lot. But I think he's one of those guys, he's going to get everything out of his tools. I don't know that he's got I think he's going to hit a little bit. I don't think there's a ton of power, but just one of those guys where he's going to get every single ounce of talent or skill out of his talent. And I think he's an outfielder. Yeah, I think he's a ball player. I do, so.
Well, I mean, that's another one of those guys you end up putting, like, David Murphy comp on.
Yeah, that's not a bad comp.
I don't know why. He's, like, my go-to guy for comps.
Yeah, Murphy might have a little more power, but yeah, that's not a bad and kind of an annoying, you know, if he's against you because he's always going to kind of spray it around, bug you, good at bats. Yeah, I like that comp.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that. So, all right, man, well, hopefully I can have you back in a couple weeks and we can talk about some of the prospects we've seen both of us in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I look forward to it, man.
All right, well, before I let you go, a spot for your plugs here. Twitter, where they can find your work, if they want to go get a hitting lesson from you, and all that good stuff.
So on Twitter, you can find me at RA_Parker. Writing-wise, you can find me at Baseball Prospectus. Sign up for that. Not, you know, I write on there, that's fantastic, but there are just so many talented writers there. If you kind of want to get an inside look at what the next generation of front office guys will be, look at, you know, just look at perspective. I think we had, what, like four guys hired out of there last year. The trend just keeps on going.
And you guys are going to have a dash of people trying to steal your talent again this year. You guys got some really good talented people, including yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky to be a part of those guys. BP is the best. And then for whatever reason, if you're ever down in Charleston, South Carolina for the next couple months, head on over to East Coast Baseball Academy and you'll probably find me hitting off a key, trying to imitate somebody's swing.
That's really awesome. I hope maybe one day I can get a hitting lesson from you. I wish you'd been around because I was a very good defensive player in high school and I had no hit tool. I mean, I think I had a zero hit tool. So
you're Brendan Ryan.
Oh, man, Brendan Ryan would have made me look like a superstar. It was just an embarrassing, embarrassing event. It's so sad looking back on it now because I know so much more about the swing than I did then. To have the internet and YouTube and guys like you around back then, that would have been quite a boon to my career. But anyways, Ryan, always good to talk to you. You're definitely one of my favorites to talk to, and I always learn so much just talking hitting from you. So, thanks again, and I hope to talk to you again real soon.
All right, man. You have a good day.
You too. And that was my conversation with Baseball Prospectus' Ryan Parker. Great friend of mine, great friend of the show, and always fun to talk hitting with him. He knows so much about the swing, and I learn something from him every time I talk to him. So, must follow him on Twitter, RA_Parker. And once again, you can find his work at Baseball Prospectus. We are done for episode 35. Next week's episodes, we are going live to Milwaukee for the Baseball Prospectus event. So we'll have some interviews and some on-site, in-person discussions. So look forward to that next week. With that, bye for now.